Hello, this is Pastor Alan Cain. Today's message is from one of my favorite stories in Scriptures, David and Goliath. The message is entitled, Don't Face the Giants, Face Your God. I hope you enjoy.
Here you go, there's David and Goliath. That's me in the red shorts. That's kind of what David and Goliath felt like. If you got your Bibles, go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel 17. I couldn't not preach on this. This is my absolute favorite story. David and Goliath. If there was ever a story made for a movie, this was it. And I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, somebody made one of those movies about Bible times, and they had the moment. It was a story of David. I thought, I can't wait for the moment with Goliath. I mean, what an epic story. What an epic moment. You know, I can see the grand panorama of the valley and David going down and being towered over by this giant. And I was truly disappointed. Absolutely disappointed. The guy he fought wasn't much bigger than him. And they were hiding and running around rocks and, you know, and trying to sneak up on each other. And like, it has absolutely nothing to do with the biblical story. And nothing like it. It was the same group of people that did the Noah story. And if any of you saw that, Noah got on his ark, you know, him and the seven others, and they're floating. And pirates attack them. I kid you not. Lot is on a boat with his family attacking Noah trying to get on his boat. Lot wasn't even alive when Noah was alive, let alone pirates weren't attacking the ship. So it's the same group of people. I shouldn't have been terribly surprised when David and Goliath wasn't quite what I thought it would be. But this story is such a powerful story because it deals with facing the battles of our life that seem where we're outnumbered, outgunned, outmanned. And there's not a one of us in here who has not felt that in their life and may be feeling that right now. That it's the battles in front of us are too big for us to fight. Too great for us. We find David in 1 Samuel 17 starting, not really starting, but making his mark on the scene of Israel in 1 Samuel 17. David was just an incredible man. He was a shepherd. He fought bears and lions by hand and killed them. And with his sling, he would rescue sheep out of their mouths. I mean, he was a true man's man. He also had eventually songs sung about him. And if that wasn't enough, he wrote his own songs about himself. And he played the harp, which would seem kind of feminine, except that he killed giants. You know, it kind of balances that out. That he was this incredible man. He was a fighter. Oh, he was a fighter. And most of his life, he did that on behalf of his God to clear the land of what God had wanted it cleared a long time ago. And this is his first scene among the people of Israel where he takes off. And the Philistines have gathered. And they're gathering up against the armies of Israel in the valley. Philistines on one side, the armies of Israel on another. And I think there's some really powerful lessons that we can learn for ourselves as we battle those issues in our life here. And even the story as it's written, as Samuel writes us, he even uses language differently in the first half of the story than he does in the second half, I think to help us understand what the people of Israel were feeling before David came on the scene. And I got that key verse here. Goliath comes up again and shouted like he had for a month and a half, except this time David heard him. And after that line, the language of the passage changes. And let me show you what I'm talking about. 1 Samuel 17, verse 1, the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Succoth between which belongs to Judah, and they camp between Succoth and Azekah in one of them long countries. Verse 2, even the preacher had a tough time with that. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah, and they drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. Okay, so they're dressed for war. They're in their battle array. And every day they come out and they stand on the side of the hill and they chant and they probably boom, 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 you know, pound their spears on the ground and clang their shields together, and they sound like an army and they look like an army. The only problem is that nobody wants to fight one like one. And so they draw up in their battle array. Verse 3, the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. Now look at the language, and if you got a pen or pencil, in verse 4, underline champion. Then a champion came from the army of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath. Yeah, that'd be enough, just have your name Goliath, you know? That's a pretty cool name. Anybody got a dog named Goliath? I know that's a good dog name. Maybe a cat name. No, it just doesn't fit, does it? And so this champion, his name was Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. Okay, good. 9.5 feet. That's 9.5 feet. Probably about the top of that, above this screen, probably. Can you imagine that fight with a guy that size, kind of like the one picture we showed? 9.5 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head. And he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. That's 125 pounds. His armor weighed 120. His armor weighed what I weigh. You're awake, aren't you? In sixth grade, I meant, no, fourth, second grade. His armor weighed what I did in second grade. 125 pounds just of armor. Can you imagine toting that around? You guys really hurt my feelings. I just want you to know that. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. Figure the shaft weighed about 17 pounds, and the head of the spear weighed 25 pounds. All right? But his shield carrier also walked before him. He had so much stuff, he had another guy carrying it in front of him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them. Now, again, this is important that we understand the language that is being used. I think it's incredibly intentional. He came and he shouted to the ranks of Israel. He didn't come and shout to the armies of the living God. He came and shouted to the ranks of Israel. That's two different descriptions of who they are. And here's the problem when we face giants, when we face these battles, is that they're the enemy. And they have their own opinion about who we are and what we are. And you know the old adage, if you say a lie long enough, it can become the truth? If you listen to a lie long enough, you start to believe it. We hear very subtle language here in this passage. He came up and he defied the ranks of Israel. All right? We see that here. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not a Philistine and you," and here it does underline it, "servants of Saul?" All right? We've looked at, underlined ranks of Israel and servants of Saul. Both those things are not wrong. But they're not all right either. They were the ranks of Israel. That is a description. Not a full one, but it is a description. And they were the servants of Saul. But that's not all they were servants of, but that part is true. And here's the thing that happens when we face these difficult times in our lives, is like that song says, which voice are you listening to? The voice of truth? Or the other voices that are speaking to you in your life that are running you down and saying you can't do it? The problem with the enemy often is that his truths are half-truths. There is some truth in it, so it's easy to bite into, but it's not the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Please help us, God. They were the ranks of Israel, and they were the servants of Saul, but that's not all they were. But he comes and he says it to him. Why are you drawing up in battle, right? Good question. Why are you playing church? You look like an army, you dress like an army, you sound like an army, but nobody wants to fight like one. Kind of like playing church. We're also an army. It's time to fight. Take on the enemy. Straight on. And he says there in verse 8, choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us. Another lie. In case you don't know this story, Goliath doesn't win. David does come down and fight him and beats him, and they did not say, oh, okay, we lost the bet, we're your servants. He was lying about that too. The only possible blessing to fighting Goliath in their mind at this moment was that we wouldn't have to fight the rest of them, and they'll just submit to us. The enemy lies. In fact, that's his title from God. He is the father of all lies. So when the enemy is trying to get you to do something that's not right and says, here's the potential blessing, it isn't much of a blessing, and it's probably not a blessing and not going to happen at all anyway. And he says, we'll be your servants if you be us. Just send a man down to me. And here we see it again. Verse 10. And again the Philistine said, and underline this, I defy the ranks of Israel, there it is again, this day, give me a man that we may fight together. I defy the ranks of Israel. Send a man and fight. I'm going to jump ahead of the story a little bit. Look at verse 25. Men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? They're telling this to David. Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. All right, now don't go ahead, but let's go back to verse 10. Goliath is speaking, who was an uncircumcised Philistine, the enemy of God, and he's telling them, I'm defying you, the ranks of Israel today. And he said it enough, and we find out later, 80 times, 40 days, twice a day, he said this to them, I defy the ranks of Israel. And guess what their language became after 80 times of hearing that? They tell David, he's come to defy the ranks of Israel. Now, it's hard to see that, but what I see when I read that is they bought the lie. Now, they're calling themselves the ranks of Israel. Well, again, that's true, but it's not all the truth that is involved. But you listen to it long enough, you begin to believe it. He says, 80 times, I defy the ranks of Israel. David comes on the scene, they start telling David, he goes, look at this guy. He's come up to defy the ranks of Israel. That doesn't end there, though. But that's the lesson. We begin to buy into it. Verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. It rhymes, but it's not very poetic. Now, I want you to, if you got a pen or pencil, I want you to write right next to that verse. I want you to write Joshua 1:9. And keep your finger here in Samuel. Go backwards to the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 1. Remember Joshua? He had no parents. Is Joshua son of Nun? N-U-N. That's a really old joke. All right, Joshua chapter 1. If you remember this story, keep your finger in 1 Samuel 17. But go back to Joshua 1. This is Joshua taking over command from Moses, and the people are coming into the promised land for the first time, and God is telling Joshua what his plans are and what will happen if he does not turn to the right or to the left. If he obeys God, God promises him, there will not be an enemy that will ever defeat you. In fact, when he first started his onslaught of the promised land, they did not lose one guy in battle, not one, until somebody sinned. And then it started going downhill after that. But God gives a promise to Joshua. None of these people in the land. And one of those people in the land were the Philistines. The ancestors of Goliath. And look what happens here in Joshua 1:9. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Verse 8 says, if you do not depart from the law, depart from this book, if you keep it, no one will be able to stand against you. And he tells them to be strong and courageous. And he says it all throughout that first part of chapter 1, that you will not ever be able to be beaten if you keep my commandments. And then he tells them, 1:9, the same words in Hebrew, that if be strong and courageous, do not be afraid, do not be dismayed. The same words in Hebrew. Now we get hundreds of years later, the people are not quite on track with God right now because of Saul and their own sin. And what are the very words we see? As soon as they hear this enemy of God, that God promised would not be able to beat them if they kept their word, his word, he said they were, when they heard it, they were afraid and greatly dismayed. When God told Joshua, when you get in the land, do not be afraid and do not be greatly dismayed. And so what did the people do? They got in the land and they were greatly afraid and greatly dismayed. Okay, we're missing the boat somewhere here. That's because they were listening to the enemy and not to God. And they were afraid. Now David comes on the scene. David was, verse 14, we're going to skip for time's sake. David was the youngest. Now the three oldest followed Saul. Just if you want to underline that line, followed Saul. Again, just some subtle phrasing in here. David was the youngest. He had already been anointed king, but it wasn't time for him to be king. Samuel had already anointed him. And some of his three older brothers were serving. David's the youngest. And David's a shepherd. And Jesse, his dad, says, take some cheese and some food and take them to your brothers and give some of this to the commanders over them so that, you know, they'll treat them well. You know, kind of greasing the skids a little bit there. Give us to his commanders and bring back word of what's going on. And we find out here, verse 15, David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flocks of Bethlehem. The Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. Again, that's 80 times. It's 80 times he keeps saying this to them. David's three brothers were there for those 80 times. But notice what it said there. It said they followed who? Saul. What's the problem with Saul? He wasn't following God. David wasn't following Saul. He was following the God that he followed out in the pastures. And so he gets there and he gives this stuff to him. And verse 20. So David rose early in the morning, left the flock and the keeper and the supplies, and went as Jesse commanded him, and came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. I don't know. I just find that funny. This is day 41, apparently. And they're still getting suited up every morning and running out, you know, their blue faces and, oh wait, no, that was Braveheart. Never mind. They're running out to the edge of the mountain and screaming and, you know, getting the war cry. And they know they have no intention of doing a thing about it. But they're trying to look like they're an army. They're really trying their best. And they go out there again and they give them the war cry and, well, Israel, verse 21, and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. And David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in the order to greet his brothers. And as he was talking to them, behold, the champion, notice we're still calling him champion now, the language has not changed yet. Behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the array, from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. Now in Hebrew, I don't know this for sure because I slept through most of the Hebrew class. Actually, I didn't. That was Greek. I slept through. I didn't take Hebrew. I don't know Hebrew real well, but I've read other commentators that said in Hebrew suggest that the language there came up, that Goliath, you know, came down the mountain the first time and stand in the valley and shouting up. And the idea is that every day he came a little farther to where he was coming up their side of the hill just to find him. Every day gets a little farther, more bold, a little more brazen. When we don't deal with those battles in front of us right away, they get more brazen, they get bigger control, and we get scared, more scared than we were. And the idea is that he's actually coming up the side maybe a little bit, getting closer to them. And it says, he said the same things that he had spoke 80 other times, except this time, David heard them. Here's an important truth. It is not the size of the battle we fight, it's the size of the God that we have in us. Goliath didn't get any smaller on day 41 than he had been on day 1 through 40. He was still as ominous and monstrous of a being as he was all the other time. And he came up just like he had been coming up, maybe even a little more brazen than he had before. Except this time, he was no different except that the ears and the eyes of the person hearing it and seeing it were different. And he says, this time, David heard him. It makes all the difference in the world. After this line, the language changes. He's never called a champion again. He's never called Goliath. He's called that uncircumcised Philistine. And I think it's on purpose. Because the language, uncircumcised means not in the clan. He's not part of the family, therefore he's not under the blessing or the protection of the Almighty. Which means he's on the cursed end of the battle, we're on the blessed end of the battle, there's no reason to fear him. Joshua, be courageous, do not be afraid or greatly dismayed. David knew that story, he knew what God had said, and he knew that this was an uncircumcised Philistine. The language changes after this line. The narrator, Samuel, doesn't write it the same way anymore, on purpose in my mind. Verse 24, when all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. We did it again. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who's come up? Surely he's coming up to defy Israel. We already read that. And it'll be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him and said, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine? Look at, he just calls him this Philistine. He's no more the champion and he's no more Goliath. What does he get if he kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? And here it is. Underline it double if you want and highlight it. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt? Here it is. Wait for it. That he should taunt the armies of Saul? Mm-mm. The armies of Israel? That he should taunt the armies of the living God. David heard him this time. And the difference was not Goliath, the difference was David. Who heard it with God's ears and saw it with God's eyes and knew the word of God that an uncircumcised person could not stand against the armies of God. And he says, who takes away the reproach from Israel and this uncircumcised Philistine who defies the armies of the living God. The people answered him accord with the word, this is what will be done. And so he tells them again, you'll get rich, you'll get the king's daughter. I don't know, you have to check it out. That may be a gift, may not be. Of course, David may not have been much of a gift either to get him as a wife. And then it says, the best one of all is your family would be free in Israel. What's that mean? They were all free. No taxes. Tax free. Now, there's something worth fighting for. I like throwing tea in the harbor or something like that. I don't know. He says, you mean I get rich, I get a wife, and my family lives tax free? I was just going to go whip him for free. Are you sure this is what he gets? He asks him again. This is what you're going to get. Well, that's nice. I'm just going to go whip him. He's messing with my God. Okay. Look what happens next. Now, this is what happens when as people of God, we step out and we try to do something bold that is unheard of, that seems insane, but we know God's leading us, and so we try it anyway. The first thing that happens is all those people that are closest to you, they'll rally behind you and say, hang it, you can do it. No, that's not usually what happens. Look what happens here. Verse 20, now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left the few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart. He actually calls it wickedness. He's the only one righteous in the place. This wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle. You come down to rubberneck. You just want to see the wreck at the race. That's the only thing you're here for. I know what's in your heart. His brother starts slamming him. But David said, what have I done now? Was it not just a question? And then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing. And the people answered the same thing as before. His family wasn't supporting him, which is wrong. But that's what happened. It's the older brother, younger brother thing, you know? Go home. You're annoying me. What are you doing down here? What are you talking about fighting this guy? You're a punk kid. What about the couple sheep Dad left you with? Who's taking care of them? Go back. Go get the sheep. You bad boy. You've always been that way. You woolly booger. You know, I'll quit. All right. You know, he doesn't support him. That happens, doesn't it? We feel the call of God to be involved in something, and sometimes we don't get the support we need. His oldest brother didn't support him. And notice what he did. He turned away from him. He didn't write him off as a brother. He just quit listening to him, and he went to someone else. And so the story progresses. And they told him the same thing. And in verse 31, and when the words which David spoke were heard, they said them to Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, the king of Israel, by the way, the one who should be out there fighting Goliath, he said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. He's just a pronoun now. He was a champion, now he's a pronoun, him. Am I right on that? Is that a pronoun? I didn't do very well in English either. I slept through that. Don't let your heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine. Then Saul said to David, some more encouragement. You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. He's just getting kudos everywhere, isn't he? A lot of support from old David. You can't fight him. He's fought longer than you've been alive. You're a punk kid. Look at it. It just doesn't make sense. And David, no, I'll fight him. And he tells him the story. I fought bears and I fought lions, oh my, and the Lord has delivered them into my hand. He gives the credit to the Lord. And then he says in verse 36, your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised, which means unprotected by the hand of God. I am protected. He is not. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted again, reminding King Saul, the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So Saul says, knock yourself out. Where do you want? What do you want on your tombstone? Go ahead. And so he gives him his armor. And David says, you know, he's trying to walk around. And he says, I haven't tested this stuff. This isn't me. This isn't how I fight. I can't wear your armor. I haven't tested it. When we fight our battles, we're made in our own unique way by God. We don't have to do it the same way other people do things. And David said, I haven't tested that. I know how God works with me. I don't have to be you. I don't have to do it your way. So he took all the armor off, and he said, I'm going to do it my own way. And he goes and he gets 5 smooth stones to put in his pouch for a sling. It could have been a lack of faith that he thought he needed 5. He is a human being, and he did not finish well at times in his life. But right now he's on a high. Or we find out later that Goliath had 4 brothers, and he thought he might have to take on all of them. And he was going to go get them all. Whatever it is, we don't know. But he took 5 smooth stones. He put them in his pouch. He took his sling. And he went out. He said, I can't use your armor. And so in verse 40, he took the stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from a brook. And he put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch. And the sling was in his hand. And he approached the Philistine. Notice these stones are smooth. And smooth by what? The power of God. They are God's smooth stones. They are his weapons, as it were. Verse 41, then the Philistine came and approached David with a shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and with handsome in appearance. He was a pretty boy, in other words, what Goliath was saying. The Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with a stick? In other words, that's what he felt about David. It's like swinging a stick at me. Are you crazy? Do you not see who I am? And he hates him. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Ooh. We're all scared now. The Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, and it's a big one, a spear, and a javelin. Okay. Most warriors carry those things. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. In other words, my Lord already has an army besides this one. It's called the angel army. And just one of them on a bad day wouldn't even have to get out of his chair to whip you. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. He's now getting the language, the right language, back to the one who's been giving him the wrong language. I defy Israel. I defy the ranks of Saul, the servants of Saul. And David says, no, that's not who you're defying. I'm just going to break it to you before I break you. You have taunted the armies of the living God, the angels, the host army. That's who he commands. That's the army you've taunted today. And I'm coming to you in the name of that God, Jehovah God, Yahweh. Verse 46, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. That's not very nice right before lunch, but and I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, but that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by the sword or by the spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hands. All right, stop there. He says, okay, big boy, you come with a sword and a spear and an AMC car. That's a javelin for those of you who don't know. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the who you taunted, the armies of God. So I'm going to strike you down, and then I'm going to cut your head off. Talk about faith and confidence. He didn't have a sword. He had a stick and some rocks. In other words, he told him, after I knock you out, you big ugly goof, after I knock you out, I'm going to take your own sword and cut your head off with your own sword. And I'm going to feed you and your army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. It's not going the way you think it's going to go today. Which I'm sure just made him, I almost said his name, made him just so happy with David. Look at this story. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. He ran to, you know, you're out there, you're finally down there, and you're thinking, oh my, what have I done? You know? I'm going to at least wait for him to get to me. Not David, who is filled with the Spirit of God. It says he took this, and he took off running. Romans 8:37, that we are more than conquerors through him who loved us, right? More than conquerors. You know what that word is in Greek? I do know this about Greek. It's hupernikeo. Hyper, Nike. Nike means conquer. Hyper means Willie. Where did he go? He just left. See what I mean? Hyper Nike. Above and beyond is what it means. No, I love Willie to death. Hyper Nike. Above and beyond conquerors. We are more than hyper Nikes. That's why Nike chose that symbol. It means to conquer. And they did. Pretty good job. I think David had the first set of Nikes on that day. And he ran to meet him, this uncircumcised Philistine. And he just takes off after him. I can imagine his oldest brother. Well, we'll get to split the inheritance six ways now instead of seven. You know, more money for us. He's always a little stupid. They're all going, no, he's not my brother. I don't know him. And he takes off and he starts running towards Goliath. He ran quickly to meet the Philistine. Verse 49, David put his hand into his bag, took from it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. He didn't fall backwards. He fell face down like he was bowing. That happens a lot with the Philistines before God. When they remember they stole the Ark of the Covenant and they brought it in their temple and Baal fell over face down in front of the Ark. You know, same kind of thing. He fell down almost bowing towards the armies of God and towards David. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of his sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw this, that their champion, now the language changes back to their perspective, when they saw their champion was dead, they fled. Can you imagine them, the Philistines, you know, they're watching this, just laughing at the little boy running. Uh-oh. And when he falls down on his face, he's taking the sword. We got to go. And they saw him, that this little boy had brought down their 9.5-foot giant, and it's time for them to run. And it turns into a slaughter that day. What are the lessons for us? It's not the size of the giant, it's the size of God. That's why I put this title. Don't face the giants, even though the movie says that, facing the giants. Don't face the giants, face your God. In my mind's eye, as I see David looking down on that battlefield, he saw a 9.5-foot man, impressive, and then he saw the Almighty standing next to him, and he goes, this shouldn't take long. And it wasn't that Goliath had changed in 41 days, it was that someone different heard it who had the Spirit of God in them. Our giants only through our faith. Now, it doesn't mean that if you have enough faith, you won't have any troubles. David had a lot more troubles the rest of his life. His life was like this, roller coaster, up and down. Your life is like that. My life is like that. Sometimes we're on those mountaintop experiences. We're doing the right things. We're in the right place. Sometimes we're not, and God keeps loving us anyway. David was a man after God's own heart, and he had made some horrible mistakes in his life. But he always find his way back, always find his way back. We got to take God at his word. David took God at his word. And the giant fell that day. We need to be people who are careful whose voice we listen to. And if we take that in, it's our believing it. We need to listen to the voice of God and to Him alone. And He tells us that we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us.
You've been listening to Don't Face the Giants, Face Your God. Ministry of the Lawrenceville Church of God, Springfield, Ohio.